In this episode of Cider Chat, I'm speaking on the color of cider. Now, I'm not talking about the color of cider in your glass. I'm talking about the color of our skin. In this episode, I'm offering up a bit of historical perspective on why specifically black farmers and cider makers are such a small part of cider making overall, and also offer steps that we can do today to hopefully engage people of color to become farmers and see opportunity in the cider making trade now. All that and a bit more in this episode number 227 of Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. This week, we are talking about why cider is white, and I'll be getting to that shortly, but I have a wee bit of news out and about in Ciderville. So let's get to that next. Before we get to our featured topic, the color of cider, I first want to share with you some emails that have come into me from new patrons of Cider Chat. The first one is from Dan Schreffler, and he is the maker at Space, Time, Mead, and Cider Works, and that is based in Dunmore, Pennsylvania. So Dunmore, just on the map, is near Scranton, Pennsylvania, which is on the eastern side of that state. Just a beautiful area, and another reason to visit Dunmore, Pennsylvania. Dan writes, "Hi, Rhea. I've been listening to your show a few years now. Really enjoy the interviews with cider makers. We may have met briefly at the Baltimore Cider Con in 2018. I was not open commercially yet and don't think I had any product with me, but I do remember you and your recording equipment slung over your shoulder making the rounds." Oh, that's kind of a classic look for me at CiderCon. He goes on with, "We opened in 2018 after about 10 years of plotting and planning. I've been making beer, wine, cider, and mead for about 12 years now. In 2010, I went through cancer treatment. All is good, with lasting side effects of perspective and impatience. In 2017, I left the corporate world, did a cross-country trip to recreate myself, and embarked on establishing a commercial winery specializing in mead and cider that same fall. I apprenticed with a winemaker as I was building out our commercial winery. 1 year to the day I left my corporate life, I opened our doors to the public and never looked back. To date, we make our mark in the mead world and have planned 2020 to be more cider-focused." All right, Dan, good for you. "We have a decent selection of drier ciders, and I was hoping to see some of them get third-party feedback from knowledgeable judges, but sadly, competitions like Glencap were canceled this year." So he has a link here where you could see his list of ciders, and I checked it out, and wow, what a complement of ciders you have. I love the names that you have for these ciders, like Earthbound Apple, which is a dry cider. Apple Omission, that's fun. Another name is Lawful Good, which is a semi-dry. And then there's Chaotic Neutral, a semi-dry, and Chaotic Good. These are crazy fun names. I love it. So check out Space Time Mead and Cider Works based in Dunmore, Pennsylvania. Thank you so much, Dan. I really appreciate it, and good health to you and yours. Next email comes in from Robert, and I'm going to say your name, Robert, in Dutch, because I think this is a Dutch last name, and I would say it as Van Waarden, which actually means Robert of Values. That's a cool name. If I was going to say it in English, I'd say Robert Van Waarden, but I like the Van Waarden. I think it sounds cool. I hope I have that right. Anyways, Robert writes, "I figured that the money we were saving on coffee, because we are isolated now, was better put to supporting the work you do." Aww. "I've been listening to your podcast on my drives to work as much as possible. The 30-minute commute is a good time to catch up, but I think I still have over 160 episodes to go. I always find that there is something that is helpful or useful to put away in my brain. We've been making cider commercially now on Prince Edward Island since May of last year, and we just celebrated our 1 year with a delivery lobster cider dinner. Dang. Oh, that got me going. We've been managing this craziness so far, and our local community continues to support us. Although we are the largest cider producer in PEI, we are still very small. The cider industry is just getting going here. Being on an island, we are isolated from all or a lot of the knowledge and happenings across the continent. That is where your podcast comes in. It has been a great conveyor of information for my young cider-making mind, and I'm always fascinated by what others are doing. I wonder if Sorbus domestica will grow in our zone. You know, I bet it would. I bet it would, Robert. Thank you for making that audio clip with Ryan available, and he's talking about Ryan Monkman, which was a special clip that patrons of Cider Chat get. I don't know Ryan, but I hope that one day our paths will cross. What he is doing is fascinating, and someday when we get a barrel program going, all the information he has shared will make it that much easier. When all this is over, we'll have to get you up to the east coast of Canada. We have a developing cider industry and great food to go with. Well, shoot, you do. I mean, lobster and cider, it kind of doesn't get much better than that. I'm there. He finishes with, I worked as a photographer for over a decade, so I know that doing your own thing is in the arts / journalism is difficult and very rewarding. Keep it up and thank you. Robert Van Vorden. Oh my gosh. Robert, thank you. Awesome email. And the cidery is called Red Island Cider. And that is based in Charlottetown on Prince Edward Island. So it's kind of like right smack in the middle of Prince Edward Island. And there is a cider making community happening there. And it is growing. And I'm watching it, Robert. And I'm really stoked to connect with you and look forward to following your path as you navigate forward from your 1 year. So tip of the glass to you and everyone there. And a big hip hip hooray. And again, yes, Sorbus domestica will probably grow in your zone. All right, moving on. This third and final email that I'd like to share with you comes in from Adam Lowen, and he writes, my wife Alicia and I just became patrons of Cider Chat, and let me tell you, it's long overdue. We have a small farm in the beautiful Cowichan Valley on Vancouver Island, and that's in British Columbia. After years of raising sheep, I decided to transition the land over to a cider apple orchard about a year ago. I had recently left my job to become a stay-at-home dad so my wife could pursue her business. I quickly found that being the primary caregiver of our baby boy didn't leave enough time, energy, or sanity to manage the livestock as well. During this time, our love for cider had grown into a passion. I realized that our gently sloping, rocky, sun-drenched land was much better suited for growing fruit apples than pasture. A few months later, I planted our first block of 500 apple trees and now have over 50 different varietals, all selected for what they bring to cider. Our dream is to have a small estate cidery by the time the trees come to bear. Woo-hoo! You don't know this, but you, the Palms, and he's talking about the Talking Palms, and all of Ciderville have kept me company while working in my orchard this last year. You were with me on the cold, muddy days planting in the fall, encouraging me to get one more tree in the ground before collapsing from exhaustion. You were there when there was 2 feet of snow on the ground, distracting me from my anxiety over winter damage. And you were there in the spring when I first saw the green tips of life sneaking out of my trees, inspiring me to keep dreaming. Whew. Thank you, Rhea. Thank you for connecting the world of cider like no one else. Thank you for the immense transfer of knowledge your podcast freely gives. Oh boy, you're starting to get me here, dude. Okay. Thank you for inspiring, encouraging, and advocating for our community. You are a titan of cider. You deserve more than what I can give at this time, but in the meantime, it's the least I can do, and I hope it helps. Cheers, Adam Lowen at Lowen Family Farm. Oh my boy, God, you kind of, that was, thank you. Thank you very much. And, wow. That's why I do the podcast, because I like hanging out with people in the orchard, virtually and non-virtually. Thank you so much, Anna, for the kind words, becoming a patron of Cider Chat and helping this podcast get on the air every week. This means a lot to me, and yeah, I'm looking for the future and hearing about those 50 apple varietals that you have. Best of love to you and yours.
Walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
It's time now to talk about the color of cider. But before we get into that, I just want to set the stage for my approach to this and really emphasize that I am not a trained historian. This is not my specialty. This topic and what I'm presenting to you now is from my viewpoint and the little bit that I have gleaned in the most recent days from producing this here episode for you and trying to make sense of our world at large. So from that vantage point forward, let's move into this arena and begin a conversation on the color of cider. You know, the interesting thing about life is that we kind of think like, this has never happened to us before. Why is this going on? It's kind of, it feels like maybe out of blue, or we look back to 20 years ago or 40 years ago. But in many circumstances, our view needs to be stretched out a bit longer. And so for myself, when I'm trying to make sense of today's experiences for cider and why the community is so white, predominantly white in terms of producing and making cider, although not necessarily white in terms of picking cider, because I know that there's many Jamaican workers that were brought in when immigration was a lot more open than it is now today in the U.S. to pick in the orchards. So by and large, I feel pretty safe to say that predominantly it is the laborers who might be people of color and the owners who are white. Now, what does that sound like when I say that? I mean, that's kind of the modern day style. But if you look at the long stretch of time, that kind of brings us back to what we would see on the plantation. Yeah, the time of slavery. And then even post-slavery, when there was emancipation, and the idea was to treat everyone equally. And that didn't necessarily happen. But before I get too far ahead of myself or confuse this topic any further, I'm going to try to make it really simple and offer to you what I've learned in my past couple days of researching. And these are these like little trinkets of wisdom that help inform me in moving forward and what I might be able to do about that by offering you this topic now. So let's look at the life of Booker T. Washington. We begin with his birth date of April 5th, 1856. At least we think it is, because Booker T. Washington was born into slavery. And we don't really know around the statistics back at that time or exact date, because the only one keeping those records would be the slave owners. And I guess it was important for them to write down a person's birthday, because then they might sell that person to somebody else. And me even saying that right now, it feels like potty mouth to even speak that way. But somehow he was able to move forward. He was an enterprising person, and he did teach himself to read and write. And that ability allowed him to move forward and become one of the most important black figures of his time in the U.S., if not worldwide. In fact, he was even invited to the White House. He is the first black American to be invited to the White House. And he also helped co-found a school for blacks at the time that provided vocational education, and it is still going strong today, and that's the Tuskegee Institute. One of the most notable speeches he ever gave that really set his platform was done in 1895. It was in September 18th of 1895, and he was speaking at the Cotton States and International Exposition in Atlanta, Georgia. Now, this was about, nearly 30 years after the Emancipation Proclamation, which took place, I believe, in 1863. But that didn't mean that there was equal opportunity at that time for African Americans. There was still deep segregation happening, and happening for many, many years later, even today. So you can imagine what the audience was primarily made up of was white people. And during that speech, his primary platform was asking blacks to not push against racial segregation. He wanted to see vocational education, which would give blacks an opportunity for economic security. And he felt that it was more valuable to them than social advantages and higher education or political offices. He asked blacks to cast down your buckets where you are and focus instead on becoming agricultural and industrial laborers. In turn for this act of accepting one's own station in the black community, he asked for a guarantee that blacks would receive a basic education and due process in law. Due process in law. What does that look like for the African American community today in the U.S.? What you're going to see is a very different picture from where probably Booker T. Washington was expecting us to be 100 years later. And the fact that there is so much inequality in our society in terms of a equitable and fair process in law is one of the reasons why we are here today with so much civil unrest. The largely white audience in attendance at the Cotton States and International Exposition loved Washington's speech. But there was fallback, and it came directly from the black community, who were called at the time black intellectuals. W.E.B. Du Bois, who is also a famous black activist, called Washington's speech the Atlanta Compromise. What is curious about Washington was that he was asking black Americans to accept their unequal position, but at the same time, he was secretly funding litigation for civil rights cases. And what that has to do with the color of cider, I believe, is found in this one particular quote from a story from Booker T. Washington that he wrote about for the Country Gentleman magazine. And this magazine was described as a journal for the farm, the garden, and the fireside. And in it, it makes a case of why it was, and I believe is, so hard for blacks to gain upward mobility and also access to resources. And it goes, in one case, I happen to remember a family that had three or four strong persons at work every day that were allowed to rent only about 10 acres of land. When I asked the owner of the plantation why he did not let his family have more land, he replied that the soil was so productive that if he allowed them to rent more, they would soon be making such a profit that they would be able to buy land of their own, and he would lose them as renters. This is one way to make the Negro inefficient as a laborer, attempting to discourage him instead of encouraging him. When I first read that paragraph, I did a double take. So I read it again, and then a couple times more. Each time, I was left feeling sad and angry. My anger was definitely directed towards a plantation owner and a mindset to hold somebody back for your own greed, your own upward mobility. Booker T. Washington's call for acceptance of one's status didn't work. Blacks have never been treated with a fair due process in law, nor have they been given the same opportunities as their white brothers and sisters. The color of cider is white, but it doesn't have to be that way. And we all know that a blend of cider apples is what cider making is all about. And that kind of translates to our bigger picture in that more diversity only makes for a bigger and better cider party. We are all catalysts for change. I mean, look at it. We're into fermenting. We like fermented products. And that's like one of the biggest like change factors around is fermentation. It fits with who we are. So with that said, I'd like to recommend the following book that can help be part of that catalyst for change. It was written by Leah Penniman and is titled Farming While Black, with a subtitle of Soulfire Farms Practical Guide to Liberation on the Land. You know, one of the things that I, in my research here, that I didn't realize or ever thought about from my viewpoint as a white person is that I look at farms as fun. You know, when I was a kid, going to the farm was going to my Uncle Bill and Aunt Tessa's farm and getting fresh milk and getting the eggs and just being there. But one of the things that this book has kind of brought out to my focus for the first time is that for African Americans, there is a bit of a stigma of going back to the farm as in going back to the plantation. I never thought of it that way. I mean, it's just that difference of realities. And the more we learn about that, maybe the more we could help each other move forward. And certainly that's my goal. And I believe deeply that that was Booker T. Washington's goal. So that might also kind of continue on that vision of his. And at the same time, definitely provide equal justice under the law for all. And with that, I'm going to leave you there and bid you adieu until next time. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Cider, we like palms, we love orchards and having fun. There is a reason,
there is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh yes, there is. There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet. We like cider, we like palms, we like orchards, having some fun.
There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
We like cider.
Oh yes, we do.
We like palms.
Oh yes, we do.
We love orchards, having some fun.
There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
Ba-da-da-dum. We like walking down the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
We like cider.
Ba-da-da-dum.
We like palms.
Oh yes, we do.
We like orchards, having some fun.
Yeehaw!